Join Greenbook at the 2024 Insight Innovation Exchange Conference Series. IIEX is your global hub for connections, inspiration, and innovative solutions in market research. Visit greenbook.org/events to learn more about events in Asia, the Americas, and Europe. Use the code PODCAST for 20% off general admission on all upcoming events.
Hello, everybody. It's Lenny Murphy with another edition of the Green Book Podcast. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to spend it with myself and my guest. And today, we are honored to have Matt Fell, the Senior Strategy Manager of Global Marketing Organization from General Mills. Matt, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Lenny. Excited to chat and tell a few stories.
You know, that's what the podcast format's for, right? Is to be storytellers. So hopefully we can make it interesting for our listeners. I suspect we will. So before we dive in, because I know we actually have a real topic, a project that you've been working on that we want to spend some time on, why don't you tell our listeners more about you, about your role in General Mills, and then we can take it from there.
Yeah. So I've been working my entire adult career at General Mills, and that's been like 23 years. So that's, I don't know, a little odd. Never expected that to be the case, but here I am. It's been great. For about, I'd say, three quarters of this work, I've been part of a unique group. It's called the iSquad. It was called the iSquad back when having an I in front of your name was maybe a little bit cooler than it would be now. It's also about 20 years old or so, but it is an internal strategic consultancy. So if you think about if you had like one of the big three, like McKinsey or Bain or Boston, and they had a baby with like IDEO, which is like all about like kind of like innovation stuff, like that's kind of like where we come out. So like business strategy and innovation strategy all smashed together.
Very cool. Yeah, over the years, I've known a lot of folks at General Mills, one of the leaders in innovation and research for a long time. And so I suspect that you've had some, over that course of that career, lots of interactions with that team as well.
Yeah, such a good set of people. A lot of diverse groups kind of like all milling about and swimming in like the innovation ecosystem. So it's a really fun set of support structures that just really drives a bunch of agile behavior and some cool innovation here.
Yeah. Yeah. Last story, there was years ago, there was the Group of Five, and it was the leaders from General Mills, Microsoft, Coke, P&G, and who was the other one? I want to say Kraft, possibly. They would meet quarterly and they would kind of plot the course. It was like the Illuminati of research, right? All right, here's where things are going to go. And often would manifest that with investment into early stage companies entering the space. And I just always thought that was really cool. I was led into not a conspiracy. I was going to play off the Illuminati thing, but it was actually fun that Stan Stanathan from Coke told me about it and just thought that's really neat. So,
yeah, I'd like to think I could steer things in similar ways, but I say we talk about how we just orbit the giant hairball, right? Like we're of the system, but not really in the system. So it gives us a little bit of flexibility to kind of work with all the other different groups and not necessarily in a puppet master way, but in a very kind of like helpful guide kind of way.
Good. So maybe we should have a conversation about the World Economic Forum of marketing and research type of group, the Bilderbergs. Anyway,
yeah, no, there's no Davos thing going on here with my group. We hang out in a lovely corporate building that has nice coffee.
Okay. Well, that is a good perk, especially for a company like General Mills, to make sure that sure. I would expect you to have good coffee, good snacks, things of that nature. All right. So on that note, let's talk about the Nourish and Joy project, because I was reading the notes and thought, all right, that sounds really cool. And a little bit of background for our listeners. This concept of joy has really popped up since 2020 in various and sundry fashions, right? I've seen lots of organizations kind of embracing this concept that, by God, we just need more joy in the world and in doing different things to kind of inculcate that concept. I was not aware of the Nourishing Joy initiative from General Mills. So tell us about that.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. So when I've chatted with other people, I've said, you know, it is both the combination of kind of like the easiest and the hardest thing that I've worked on. And it's the easiest because like when you put a meeting on someone's calendar that says like, let's talk about joy, like no one turns you down, right? Like everyone is more than happy to take a little bit of a break out of like their daily, whatever they are, running the business, running a P&L, like chat with you about joy. So that's like the easy part. The hard part is like, when you look at like some of these, what I'll say are like positive emotion topics, there's a lot of, especially if you're the people who are digging into it, a lot of, I'd say, unearned feeling of like subject mastery. So, or like competency. So like you think you know more than you do, right? Because everyone experiences joy, everyone eats food, and it just feels like a really familiar topic. And I think it makes it challenging because you have to kind of take a step back and forget all the stuff that you know in order to look at it in a more structured way.
Okay, that makes sense. I think that, well, the whole concept of anything around behavior and emotion and kind of factoring that in to business continues to be, an evolutionary process where we're trying to find that framework of, wait, how does this fit? So how did you approach getting people on board with that when there is so many disparate, maybe assumptions going in?
Yeah, I mean, everyone was on board because when you take a look at like the stuff that we have dug into in the past, right? Like we're really good at understanding health and wellness. We're really good at understanding satiety and energy. We're really good at understanding convenience. But when you actually like look at the numbers, it's something like 46% of food dollars are spent on like taste and experience. So everything else falls into that other. So you're like, oh, there's all these other like whatever six categories that I named off. I'm like, okay, that's about 50%. The other 50% is this thing like around joy. And so you're like, guess what? You know, we have not dug into this in a way that is comparable to those other things. And it's such a big space that like, why wouldn't we try and like create some sort of strategy around it? And especially too, like this one was specifically focused on adults, right? Because it's very easy to go to, oh, like kid joy, like kind of like a fun and novelty and whimsy and things like that. But like when you think about kind of like, okay, what drives joy for adults when it comes to food? You know, that's a little bit different. And so like, okay, like there's a big space and there's a big opportunity and we haven't really given it the due that it deserves.
Okay. So that makes perfect sense. And thinking General Mills, my default, and it's my childhood memories, is the cereal lines, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, yep. And certainly joy that I would have Saturday morning, you know,
sitting in front of the TV,
sitting in front of the TV,
cereal.
Yeah.
Yep. Cereal is the, usually the first thing that kids can make for themselves, like it's considered a meal. So it's always one of the, you know, it's an anchor in people's mind because not only is it something that's fun to eat, but it's one of that first transitions into like self-sufficiency.
Yep. A sense of accomplishment. No, mom, I got mm-hmm. it, you know? So
yeah.
that's neat. Okay. We won't go down the nostalgia pathway anymore, but I'm experiencing joy just from the, that piece of the conversation. So tell us about the project, right? Was this something that was baked in across organization of, look, we're going to lean into this concept because we know this is such a huge driver of choice. And how was that manifested and implemented within the organization?
Yeah. I mean, we had these different pillars, these spaces of interest, some of them aligning to the ones that I talked about previously. And joy itself was declared as a pillar. And so there were multiple groups looking at it across multiple different fields, right? Like, you know, we got very technical and scientific folks, and there are functional things you can do to products that deliver more joy. We have people who are consumer insights folks who like really understand, you know, kind of like the consumer and things like that. So yeah, I'd say it was a multi-pronged approach to how it was being tackled. We were one of the tools in the tool belt that got to take a swing at it. Yeah.
Any surprising insights, things that just, as you've gone through this process, like, wow, now that was really, really interesting.
I mean, there's lots of interesting, like it's a complex space. Like when you think about kind of like how joy manifests in food. So I'll give you an example. Okay. So if you're thinking about, let's say like Cheetos, all right. Have you eaten Cheetos? Do you know Cheetos?
Hence why I'm doing the low carb diet now. I've eaten more than my fair share with Cheetos. Yes. So,
all right. So let's see if this works out. What would you think is the number one consumer complaint when it comes to people eating Cheetos?
Orange fingers,
right. Messy fingers. So that's the number one complaint, hands down, of, you know, all the stuff that gets on people's fingers. So then I'll say, and hopefully I'm setting you up right here. What do you think is the one thing Frito should never change about Cheetos?
The cheesy flavor?
The cheesy flavor. and the messy fingers.
And the messy fingers.
And so, yes.
There's the tension.
Basically what, yeah, so this is the tension. So when you think about, when you talk to people about it, they're like, oh, like you show them pictures of people with like all the cheese on their fingers and then they like cringe. Like it's a visceral reaction. Like, you know, oh, and they talk about like it's messy and it's inconvenient and all that kind of stuff. And I think people actually like one point in time, like tried to like do a like, you know, a non-sticky cheese thing because there's very smart food scientists. But the thing is, like, when it comes to food joy, like you take that away, what your brain is missing, it's like, it's not signaling that cheesy experience. You're not getting the enjoyment of like licking it off your fingers. Like you have your rational brain that's telling you, oh, this is inconvenient, this is annoying, things like that. But like, you like it. And that's the difficulty when it comes to some of this like food joy stuff. There's this whole system one, system two thing, like lizard brain, thoughtful brain. And so like, sometimes as you're like talking to people about food joy, it's really difficult to kind of like separate that rational from the irrational and what part is actually like the driver of the joy of the food.
Sure. Well, this is talking about Cheetos and instead of doing the low carb thing, the challenge of a diet like that, at least for me, is the lack of joy. Truly. I wouldn't have said that until probably now, but it's like, God, this is boring. I mean, I love meat. I love cheese, right? That type of diet works for me from that standpoint. But what I miss is crunch.
Yep.
So the snacks, I miss those components. And anything baked of any nature, right? The consistency. It sucks with low carb stuff. You know, it's great. There's this whole other category. I'm sure you guys have a subcategory of low carb snacks as well. But they're just not the same as that eating a bag of Cheetos, right? And
yeah,
I'll throw this out for you guys. That is probably, we did find the, I'm sorry if I had the brand name, so forgive me, but it is the brand of Cheetos that are baked and somewhat organic that General Mills makes. And that was a, by God, if I'm going to do this, I need access to something that's close to that experience that makes me happy while I'm eating, or else it's just a chore.
Yeah. Okay, so here's another example I can tell you about that. So like this was, you know, as we talk about kind of like the tension of what we were trying to figure out, like with this joy thing, the direction at which you come at something drastically affects your output, right? So if you think about like joy, a lot of times as developers and strategists and things like that, you think about kind of like, what's the problem to solve? Like, what is the problem that you're trying to get after? And the difficulty with all this is joy is not a problem, right? Like, I'm just going to cut straight to the end there. Like, joy is not a problem. You're trying to make it a problem and it's horrible. Like, things go completely awry. But you do kind of have this tension of kind of like, we called it the bright side and the shadow side, right? And depending on which direction you come at it, you get different results. So if we're thinking about your low carb thing, you could say that the shadow side there is deprivation. Right? Like you have been deprived of something that you love. You love the Cheetos. And if I were to say, okay, that's a thing, right? And like, let's say I'm playing around with ice cream and I start with that focus of deprivation, I might come up with something like Halo Top, right? People who are on a specific diet or whatever, they really want ice cream. They feel deprived. Well, now I can have Halo Top and that's good, right? And so that's coming at something from the point of like that problem deprivation. Let's say I flip it and I say, okay, what's the opposite of that? Abundance, right? So let's say now I'm still thinking about ice cream and I start with that focus of abundance. I might come up with something like the Ben and Jerry's core that's got the center of fudge or caramel or things like that. It's kind of two sides of the coin, but depending, and it's the same category, but depending on where you start, you come up with something completely different.
Yeah, my wife lectures me often with that very same concept of honey. It's not that you're deprived. Just think of all these new options that you have and with a different level of enjoyment, right? It's a new experience to enjoy. I don't do well with that thinking personally because I'm narcissistic and overly self-indulgent. So in many ways, but
people want what they want, right? And it's really hard to change someone's frame of reference of how they approach life and they approach food.
So as a food producer, obviously concerned about health and wellness and those things as well, as you were going through this process of thinking about joy, was there also kind of this awareness of responsibility of, look, we need to make products that bring people joy, but also are healthy and fulfill that because we can't just live off Cheetos as much as you may want to, right? So What's that intersection been like in terms of the brand? How's that impacted the company in kind of thinking through your core mission and even your product lines?
The nice thing about like the structure that we created and what we did is that it can be overlaid onto anything, in the sense of like, we were thinking about this in the beginning. We were like, okay, what do we scope? What do we keep in? What do we keep out? But like, well, ultimately, like any aspect of food, depending on the approach you're taking, you're seeking joy in some way. So, you know, if I'm saying the thing about like Halo Top, Halo Top is great. And Halo Top is a great solution to something. And that works. And that is a good way to deliver joy in someone who's kind of like dealing in that, like that weight loss space or calorie conscious or whatever. And so we were very mindful in kind of like our approach of creating these spaces and these areas for teams to dig into, that it could be, like I said, overlaid onto anything, right? Like if you are a brand like Progresso Soup, which is, you know, just kind of a good straightforward soup, like I can help you with that. And I can tell you how to deliver joy within soup, right? I can understand the levers of delight that are at your disposal to, like, you know, make it more interactive, make it more comforting, make it last longer, things like that. Or, you know, if I'm working with something like Gushers, you know, which is purely about fun and weird and craziness, like I can overlay it on that too. And I can come up with things that are absurd, or I can create the antithesis of Gushers and like put the gush on the outside and things like that. So it's versatile enough that if you come to me with like a, this is kind of like what we're thinking, we're like, great, we have an approach for you.
Very, very neat. Yeah. So I'm not sure if it's still current, but within, I know from P&G for a long time, they standardized on the hierarchy of needs. Right. And everything is through that lens, the reports that were delivered, you know, there was the component of how does this translate into the hierarchy of needs. So it sounds like you've kind of built the hierarchy of joy as a framework across the organization. And this is a lens that we're going to look at every aspect of the business. Is that an overstatement or is that?
I mean, I would say I'm not going to give myself that much credit. You know, we are a small group that does big strategy work. And it's something that we kind of, you know, we treat it again, like a consultancy, and as an, if like a team needs help and we want to work with them, we do. But this is not an overarching company edict or structure. We're like a jobs theory group. Like we make jobs maps and things like that. So like I can help you think about things like familiarity and presence and exploration and fun and like all those different like areas, but it is not like a guiding document for the company.
Okay, got it.
Something I can strive to get someday, but right now we're just doing yeoman's work.
Okay. Well, but I think it's really impactful, yeoman's work. Again, Lord knows we need more joy in the world. So I think it's a really cool principle. So I hope it gets that way. So
yeah, hey, dare to dream.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so you named this project internally Riley after the main character of Inside Out. Tell us about that. How did that influence your thinking? Was that just a contextual framework that was useful early on? Or was there other pieces of that that you thought, yeah, this is really appropriate?
It worked well in the sense of, as we're just trying to, you know, you try and get something that's short, you try and get something for me that's easy to spell, you try and get something that's pithy, that has like a good connection back, and maybe there's like a degree or two of separation, all those clever things that you try and do with project names. Like the whole thing here is like, you know, when you think about Inside Out, so you think about that, there's this conflict in there where it's between joy and sadness, right? So joy is...
I sobbed in that. Man, when she left in that movie, it's like, oh my God, Riley, no. You know.
Oh my God, and Bing Bong. Okay, yeah.
And so Bing Bong, I know.
Yeah. Yeah. So the whole part of it is like joy is very much wanting to protect Riley from sadness, right? Like that's kind of like part of the thrust of it. But ultimately, joy comes to terms with the fact that though like undiluted sadness, so like what I'll call the shadow side, is destructive, right? And doesn't have to work. The emotion of sadness gives birth to things like empathy and compassion. And so it was this idea of balance, you know, this bright side, shadow side type thing of, you know, problem, opportunity, that really kind of intrigued us. And I do think, you know, I think Disney does an amazing job when it comes to featuring things like that. And it just so happened that Inside Out was perfectly suited for what we were looking at.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a huge fan of the Pixar stuff. I think they've had some misfires lately, but that's a whole other conversation. But Inside Out was truly a fantastic movie. And as a father, you know, watching it with my kids and like, all right, this is like therapy session now. So
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing too. Like I always use a lot of things like that, especially Disney, when talking to teams about like empathy. Like empathy is it's always this lofty goal that we're trying to get to. We don't realize that it's kind of a step process, and empathy is like the best thing, but like, oh, we want to get empathy within our people for the consumer. But like with Disney, it's great because you can say like empathy exists there. Cause like if you cry during a Disney movie, you are feeling an emotion that you are not actually in. And so there you go. There's the best example that I can give for you about like how empathy actually happens.
Yeah, we'll move on from that because I'm actually tearing up still thinking about Bing Bong. So can you talk about the research that you did? What was that like?
We have a process. It's called the I3 process. It stands for immersion, interaction, and then like idea creation. The whole thing is you get super smart on a topic. Like you talk to all the experts, you find out all the information, you know, whether it's mainstream media or other type of stuff. Interaction is like, you know, if that's getting your head smart, it's getting your heart smart, right? This is the building the empathy part. And we say only once you put those two together, can you actually, do you earn the right to then come up with ideas? So basically, or to come up with a strategy or to come up with a framework or whatever it is. So we did lots of immersion. We got really smart. I'd say the thing that was kind of interesting about this from an interaction standpoint is, you know, we did more kind of like emotional inquiry. And so anytime we have like these big, heavy topics, oftentimes it goes negative, right? Like you have like things like heart health and weight loss and things that kind of like have some really tough, for lack of a better term, negative emotions associated. But this time we're like, you know what? Given all that complexity that I talked about before with kind of like joy, we're like, I think that would work for this too. So I'd say it's a level deeper of consumer interaction in that, you know, there are more trained professionals in the psychology field. People are put in a situation where they feel very comfortable. They ask them to kind of like, you know, think about kind of like situational type stuff. There's closing of the eyes. And I think you can extract some really good nuggets that helped us kind of like put the different pieces together.
All right. So let's think about kind of outcomes now, right?
Yeah.
The joy of shareholders. Can you share some insight into how this has impacted this framework of, you know, brand loyalty or brand lift and, you know, sales? Have you seen measurable components that way?
I can give a couple examples. What I'll say is the thing about our team is the point of seeing results is often quite distant from the point of kind of like where we come in and help being a front end strategy group. And so we're waiting on a lot of stuff, but like, okay, so we have an internal group that has a bunch of like co-founders. Right. So they are small teams of 2 and 3 that act like startups within the company. And one of the things that we're tasked with doing is help them like kind of like figure out the places to start. And so a couple of the teams are starting in the space of joy. So some are in their infancy, but like one recently came out with a product called like it's called like Plate of Plenty. It's an extender for ground meat. And so like if you were like, you know, starting with a pound of ground meat, this would give you like a pound and a half, and they're flavoring different things. But that was coming at the joy from the sense of like what the parent is able to put on the table of being something, you know, to bring the family together, to have this kind of connection. And oftentimes it's over these types of communal meal type things, like if you think about like tacos or other stuff like that. And so this is the ability to kind of like give them more there. So within kind of like the co-founders, that's one example of a product that came out of it. I'd say on the brand side, we've done a bunch of work with our fruit, our diff fruit, which is like gushers and fruit by the foot and fruit roll-ups. And we've seen some fun things come out of it as far as like their news and how they've responded to things. I think they do an excellent job when it comes to joy. The whole ice cream and fruit roll-up TikTok trend worked out quite well on our side. And the team did an amazing job of kind of capitalizing on the joy that comes from putting ice cream in there and getting kind of like that crunchy bite and kind of like getting it out to folks.
Yeah, my kids have done some of those things and they were certainly joyful while doing it. So now how about, you know, early on we touched on nostalgia, you know, sit in front of the TV, the bowl of cereal. Has that been a component in targeting old fogies like me?
I mean, nostalgia was an interesting animal to dig into with joy, because I think what happens is the thing that people often go to initially with nostalgia is this idea of like happy childhood associations, right? That's immediately where we went of kind of like the cereal bowl in front. So like, I want to live the joy that I felt when life was like carefree and innocent. The interesting thing about nostalgia as we dug into it is that, you know, it's multifaceted, right? There are different ways in. So like there's reminiscent memories, right? These are like, I want to recreate feelings from enjoyable past experiences, right? I went and I took a vacation 10 years ago. It was in a tropical place. I don't leave you to keep coconut rum at my house, but now I'm at a bar and I got this drink and it's got a pineapple and oh man, like that's great. Like that's nostalgic. Or like the other one is like, I call it reminiscent past. So I want to experience like an idealized time or place that maybe seems better or more interesting than the present. And the way we joke about this is like, people are like, oh, the 1940s, they were so great. We're like, oh, the 1940s had war and polio. Like it wasn't really great, but you know, in the moment, life is hard. Like I said, there's all those things like, you know, if the good side is familiarity and presence and exploration and fun, like the bad side is instability and inundation and monotony and gravity. Like those are heavy things. So like sometimes it's not that bad to like kind of like project onto the past. And so, yeah, I mean, we've done tons of nostalgic things. You can see like retro cereal boxes coming out. We relaunched Dunkaroos. You know, everyone loves Dunkaroos. You can see it actually, you know, not even us, like the number of 90s songs that are showing up in commercials now is just amazing. So like nostalgia plays big.
Yeah. It's... You'll appreciate this. I was just chatting with a buddy the other day and about the growing up, right, in the '80s, and like, yeah, you know, you jump off the ramp of this box and you fall and you're just nothing but skin, knees and elbows. But yeah, that was great, wasn't it? And at the time that wasn't great. That really sucked. But
okay. So here's one of my favorite things with that. A while back, I got like a set of DVDs, right? So we're talking a while back, like a physical set of DVDs of old Sesame Street episodes. And on it, it specifically has a warning and said, for entertainment purposes only, not for educational use, because what we consider these days to be like a purpose. So like, you know, kids are riding bicycles without helmets. I don't know, Oscar's smoking a cigarette, like something like that, like things that would not make it into today. And so it's interesting. Again, you talk about like, oh, I skinned my knee and it's great. Like, no, that like really hurt. Yeah. Like there are things that like in the past, maybe just don't necessarily translate the same way now.
Although I did, we did buy Schoolhouse Rock.
Oh, God, so good.
Yes, but for the kids, it's like, yeah, you know, some of this stuff is a little outdated, but you know, by God, I learned a lot, you know, of watch Schoolhouse Rock and you are too. So.
Conjunction, what's your function? Junction. I'm just hooking up words and phrases and clauses.
Absolutely. I'm just a bill. You know?
It's catchy and it sticks with you.
Yeah, it really does. Really does. So anyway, we could go off in all types of places from that. So steer back to the pragmatic components. This sounds like a really great project. And we've been kind of playing off of this, but is there anything else that you wanted to make sure that our audience hears to help inspire them from your learnings that I haven't asked about?
You want to talk joy? You want to talk something else? What's your preference here?
I think whatever, you know, we don't go into these things, at least I don't, with an agenda per se, but often I have that experience of, oh, I wish that I had talked about that while I had the opportunity and didn't. So let's not go through that. So is there something that you think, you know, I'm talking to a big audience of researchers, of marketers, both, you know, brand and supplier side, I want to make sure that they get this key takeaway from this conversation and whatever that is.
Yeah. Let's end it with a story, shall we?
Do it.
Okay. So this was some research that was done in the past. So it wasn't exactly part of this project, but as I was kind of like reflecting upon things that we've done, like this factored in quite fully. So was doing kind of like a full snacking exploration in India, right? So we were going apart, all parts of the country, seeing what people snack on, trying to understand similarities, differences. And we were doing some stuff in the South, and I was talking to three younger girls. It was in their house. We're hanging out in one of their rooms. Mom's like hanging out by the door as we're there. And, you know, we're talking about one of their favorite snacks. Like, what is your favorite snack? And one of them talked about like this fried potato snack from this vendor that's like right down the house. And, you know, it's, you know, if I could, like, it'd be the only snack I'd have. Like, I love it. It's heaven. She goes on and I'm taking notes and like, this language is gold. Like, I mean, it's just like, it's just everything she says is like fantastic. And then the interviewer, because the interview was happening in like Tamil or something like that, asked her like, you know, well, what if you couldn't have those snacks? What if you could only have the snacks that your mom makes? You know, what if it's that? And she basically, she just like stops dead and she's like, that would be hell. She's like, I would not want to eat anything else. And like, she says it with like such vehemence and conviction that like, I stopped taking notes. Like I stopped taking notes. And now the mom is giving me the stink eye because like, I'm not even doing the interview, but I'm the one who's kind of like instigating this. And so while this is all happening, this young girl who's like 9 sees that I'm not writing, gets my attention, like does one of those, makes intense eye contact, points at the paper in English, says like, note it down. Like note the, like it was super important to her in that moment that I like recognize this vast difference between like the food she absolutely loves and like everything else. So like my thing there was like, you know, food is like something that we do every day. And like, it doesn't, you know, oftentimes we don't give it much thought, but like the act of eating and food is like one of the greatest vehicles for like experiencing joy. So like that thing there, it's repeatable. Like it's something that everyone can do. And so like everyone should just give themselves a little bit of joy when it comes to food.
That's a great story. And you're a good storyteller, Matt.
Thank you.
The stink eye from the mom part. That was great.
Yeah. It wasn't in the moment, but it's great. Great upon reflection.
Oh man, that is funny. And it's not helping my sticking to my low carb because now my first thought is, yeah, I deserve joy. I deserve a burger and fries, by God, and some Cheetos. So anyway, that's great. Matt, really, it's been a joyful conversation. Really enjoyed just laughing about this, but a great topic as well. So I hope that more companies can do this. Have you ever thought about, you know, writing a book or you know, doing a internal podcast within General Mills, talking about some of these learnings and how to incorporate them? Because I think you'd be a natural.
It's very kind. I'd like to say that our group is full of kind of like storytellers and dot connectors and all that. So it's a great space that a lot of us have found our way into. No podcast, no books as of yet, but we will continue to sow the seeds within General Mills.
Okay. Well, if you decide you want to extend that out to a wider audience, let us know.
Very much. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Final question. Anything else that you wanted to bring up that we didn't bring up?
I mean, a new thing we're digging into, like things that we're kind of playing around with, looking at impulse currently. So, you know, it's an interesting topic when you think about it from a food and a non-food standpoint. Like everyone knows all the stories about like casinos and how they kind of like do their best to either get you to act on an impulse and suppress, you know, rational thought. We got a lot of stuff, you know, you think about like first moment of truth and how to get someone's attention 4 feet in 4 seconds. But right now, kind of playing around with that and seeing like, what does it mean for people to act on it? What are the barriers? What are the triggers? Like, you know, I'm a lazy person. I go into a convenience store. I don't want to walk back and find the ice cream. So like, what do we do about that? Or like sometimes a door, like there's a door. I don't want to open a door. Like that's too much work. So it's been fun kind of digging into the psychology of how people think about triggers and barriers to either acting upon an instinct or not.
Yeah, sure. Well, all the, you know, product display and, you know, I've often explained to my kids, like, oh, why is the candy all right here at the grocery store? Like, so you'll get it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's exactly it. It's an impulse buy.
Yeah. Or why is it in the back? So they lead you through everything else to get the thing you want. Right.
Yeah. The whole other conversation on, you know, the fascinating components of product placement and design, et cetera, et cetera. So we'll save that for the next time. So
sounds good.
As you dive more into impulse, let's come back and you can tell us about what you've learned about impulse control or lack thereof.
The date.
Okay. All right. Where can people find you?
I don't know if I'm embarrassed or proud to say basically nowhere. Like I more or less have like no social media presence at all. Like I think I'm just too easily distracted and I would never emerge from my hole. I guess LinkedIn, right? Everyone has LinkedIn. That's a thing. So yep. Sure. That's where you can find me.
Okay. Speaking of impulse control then, right?
Yeah, so exactly. I know my limits. Yeah,
right there with you. I am, gosh, coming up on 4 years Facebook sober. And yeah, but boy, that monkey was on my back for a long time. So
it's hard. It gets you.
Yeah, it does. It does. So anyway, on that note, thank you so much for taking the time. Really appreciate it. This has been a great conversation. And best of luck to everything that you're working on now.
Thanks. It's been fun. I appreciate it.
All right, great. And a big shout out to our producer, Natalie, our editor, Big Bad Audio, our sponsors, and of course, our listeners, because without you, Matt and I wouldn't have had the excuse to sit down and chat. We may have connected, but probably not. So, you know, this was great. Thank you for giving us this opportunity. And that's it for this edition of the Green Book Podcast. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Join Green Book for the 2024 Insight Innovation Exchange. This global conference series, also known as IIEX, is where connections are made, inspiration is found, and innovative solutions are discovered. With more than 90% of attendees using IIEX insights to shape strategic business decisions, the return on investment is undeniable. Whether you're in Asia Pacific, North America, Europe, or Latin America, IIEX is your gateway to the latest market research best practices, tech innovation, and strategies for transporting insights into action. Nurture your career and business with insights from across the globe. And here's a bonus. Use the special code PODCAST to save 20% on general admission for all IIEX events. Visit greenbook.org/events today to learn more and register. See you there.